All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower, here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means a little bit later on, my dad will be calling in to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we've got a Blackhawks Express from a pretty exciting game from last night. 7th shutout for Corey on the season. And Monday morning movie reviews. That's what you just heard. Now, normally Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me. Colin has been taking a little time off. So my friend Jim Leskowski has been sitting in, and he is going to sit in this morning. And normally you hear Eric Childress with us, but Eric is in Sundance. He's at the Sundance Festival in Utah. And we're going to hear from him in just a little bit. And he'll join us live to give us a rundown on what's going on in Sundance at the festival. So we got that coming up a little bit. So our phone number is 312-981-7200. And you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow, Twitter at NickDShow. All right, let's bring Jim on, and Jim Leskowski is here, and again, we'll hear from Eric live from Sundance in just a little bit, but we'll bring Jim in. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Nick, how's it going, man?
All right. Tell everybody really quickly about your podcast network and about Jim Hankey's got two of them up now. Our friend Jim Hankey's got two podcasts going right now, right?
Yeah, he's got two episodes. I was posted over at nowplayingnetwork.net. His show is called Vinyl Emergency, and, it's sort of an extension of what he covers on your show in terms of his, you know, enthusiasm and love for vinyl. But he does mostly interviews with various musicians and collectors and things along those lines. So it's all around, you know, encompassing music podcast that's really, really right out of the gate is high quality stuff.
And that's nowplayingnetwork.net. Nowplayingnetwork.net. And your podcast is called?
Director's Club podcast. That's got a really fascinating 3.5 hour long epic episode on the one and only Stanley Kubrick, just posted not just a couple hours ago. So very excited about that episode, and had a tremendous guest on, a guy named Al, who really had a lot of great insights to 2001 that even I was not aware of.
So. Okay. All right. Great stuff. Yeah. All right. So nowplayingnetwork.net. Nowplayingnetwork.net for Jim's podcast. And Jim has been a part of the show for a really long time and a listener for, geez, man, I don't even know how many years. 27 years he's been listening. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. All right, let's get to the movies. We got some we got to review here, and then we're going to take a little break here and have Eric come in and give us some updates on what's going on at Sundance, Jim.
Sounds good.
Why don't you start for us? Start off with Ip Man 3.
All right. Let's start out on a high note, because I think this week I get to account. And that I had never seen any of the other Ip Man films.
Oh, really?
So, including the two that came before by the same director, nor Wong Kar-wai's take on this story of a legendary kung fu master who apparently went on to become Bruce Lee's mentor and teacher.
Right.
Donnie Yen reprises his role here as Ip Man and does so with a lot of charm on display. And here we find the kung fu grandmaster settling down in 1959 in Hong Kong with his wife and son. His son attends a school that a mob of bad guys want to demolish for the land, apparently. And this mob happens to be ruled by an evil, very well-dressed real estate dealer named Frank, played by the one and only Mike Tyson.
Right. I saw he was in the cast list, and I was like, the same Mike Tyson, for real? And it's him.
Yes, indeed. After Ip sort of interferes with Frank's plans to harass the school's headmaster, there's obviously going to be a confrontation, a final showdown. And after that incredible fight occurs, there's still a half hour to go. There's yet another showdown between a jealous rival who wants to be top dog and take away the fame and attention from Ip Man, so he too challenges him to a duel towards the end of the film. So now when this movie is on, it is so on. Donnie Yen has a great sense of control and understatement, kind of like when he's fighting. It's almost as if it's relaxing and effortless. He barely bats an eye while he's kicking butt. It kind of makes it fun to watch in that regard. There are certain moments that made me think of Bruce Lee and maybe even Jackie Chan because of the acrobatics involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, director Wilson Yip, he shot some beautifully choreographed sequences that give the film energy and elegance, and it's a breath of fresh air. It really is. I mean, there is a cancer subplot, and I realize it's autobiographical, but there's a lot of downtime throughout this film where you find yourself anticipating the next action sequence. But if you're a fan of the first two films and you just want to see some terrifically executed martial arts, I say give this one a look. It's quite good.
I saw the first one, and I liked it a lot. And then the second one has been on cable a couple of times. I haven't seen the whole thing, but parts of it I've seen that I really like, and I'm planning on seeing this one. But this is a good series,
Yeah.
Donnie Yen is great, man. He's a great screen presence, and he can kick some ass. So
yeah, I remember seeing him in Iron Monkey, I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to catch up with the other two films from the series. Yeah.
Okay, and it is playing at the River East. Is the only theater that it's playing at in Chicago.
Correct.
River East. So you can check it out there. Now, is it on the on demand? I didn't.
I don't think so.
I think it's.
I would imagine that maybe in a couple weeks it probably will be.
Yeah. Okay. But right now, if you want to see it in Chicago, it is at the River East and a really good martial arts movie. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
All right, Jim. Why don't you tell us about 45 Years?
Okay, so this is the story of a couple named Jeff, played by Tom Courtney, and Kate, played by Charlotte Rampling, who have been married for 45 years, and they're planning a celebratory party as their 40th anniversary went uncelebrated due to an illness. So the week of the party, however, a letter arrives from Switzerland informing Jeff that a body discovered frozen in a glacier in the Swiss Alps has been identified as his long-dead girlfriend. The story of this old love of Jeff's, who had accidentally fallen to her death while they were away on holiday together in 1962, is actually known to the wife, Kate, since it happened before they actually met and became a couple. But the effect of the letter on Jeff gradually changes, the assessment of their marriage. They just sort of fall into a little turmoil. And Kate, you know, starts to reevaluate everything that she has felt. And, you know, there's just a lot of tension brewing as a result of this letter. So it ultimately just becomes a film about reassessing both the past and the present and what new feelings are conjured up and what that means for the future of this particular couple. This movie kind of devastated me, I got to say. I believe it might have been Colin who described this as kind of a movie that Mike Lee would have made.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree with that. It's a very gradual and intimate character study of two people dealing with some very heavy emotions that are almost crippling at times, but they manage to just find ways to cope within their relationship. So it's small, but it's quite remarkable in how we watch this couple process conflicting emotions before our eyes. You experience moments that you normally don't see behind closed doors, particularly a love scene that I imagine can happen to a lot of couples around that age. So in a way, the whole film feels like a gun waiting to go off, and it slowly builds tension in a way that I was enthralled by. So, up until the very end, which easily has one of the best final moments to a movie I've seen in quite some time, and the performances are just tremendous. There's a reason why Charlotte Rampling is nominated. So I can't recommend this movie enough. This is by far the best pick of the week.
It's a pretty great movie. We've talked about this one. It's a film that obviously it didn't open here in Chicago until this past weekend.
Right.
But it was released in New York and Los Angeles and elsewhere for Oscar consideration. And, of course, Charlotte Rampling did get nominated for Best Actress. And we did talk about it at the end of the year because Colin included it on his list, and we discussed how much we like the film, and particularly the two lead performances.
Absolutely,
it is. I mean, it does have a killer ending. I mean, unbelievable final moment. And overall, it's a real pleasure to watch two actors of this caliber do the kind of work that they're doing in this movie, and have a script that supports that kind of work. Like, it's a really beautifully written movie and very well directed. So, as much as everybody's talking about Charlotte Rampling, and she did get the nomination for Best Actress, and let's not talk about the controversy surrounding Charlotte Rampling. Yeah, she's not going to win, but she made some really stupid public statements this past week that made, you know, of course, headlines all over the place and on the internet and stuff like that. Really kind of baffling, actually, that she would say what she said. And it's kind of guaranteed the fact that Brie Larson is going to win. It's going to win the Academy Award. But she's remarkable, despite, this public outcry against her. It's a remarkable performance as it stands. It's a really great, great, great performance. One of the best female performances of the year. And I know that because Charlotte Rampling got the nomination and now continues because of the news to be overshadowing Tom Courtenay. Tom Courtenay is remarkable in this movie, too.
Sure.
It's a really great performance. And, a lot of people are acknowledging Charlotte Rampling, and I think Tom Courtenay needs to be acknowledged as well. This is a true partnership of acting in this movie. They both support each other. They're both terrific. And it is a really, really fine film. And that's called 45 Years. And you'll hear more about it. You've probably already heard a lot about it in the past few weeks, but Charlotte Rampling did get a nomination. And if you want to see 45 Years, and I highly recommend that you do, it's at the River East. It's at the Century Center Cinema in Chicago. It's at the Landmark Renaissance in Highland Park, and it's in Evanston at the Century. So those are the places where you can see 45 Years. Both Jim and I highly, highly recommend it. A pretty great film. Okay, Jim, hang on, all right?
Okay,
all right, Jim Leskowski is with us. He is filling in for Colin Suter while Colin takes a little time off. We're going to take a break. We come back. We've got some more movies to review. And then Eric Childress is going to join us live from Utah to talk about what movies he's seen at the Sundance Film Festival. And I'm assuming at this point he's on film number 606. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, on a Monday morning. And that means that my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're back here. And Colin Suter, as you know, is taking a few weeks off. Our friend Jim Leskowski is filling in for him. And Eric is out in Utah right now at the Sundance Film Festival. We're going to get a live report from him in just a few minutes. He'll be joining us from Utah. Right now, Jim and I are in the middle of reviewing the new movies. Jim reviewed Ip Man 3, the martial arts movie. This is the third in a series of really terrific martial arts movies. Jim recommended that. And we both recommend 45 Years with Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtenay. Both highly recommended. And in particular, Charlotte Rampling gives a great, great performance in 45 Years. Okay, we got some more movies to review, and then Eric's going to join us to talk Sundance and other stuff. Jim, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, let's hear about, I didn't get a chance to see it, but let's hear about The Fifth Wave.
Oh, boy. Well, January definitely is here.
Yeah.
The wonderful Chloe Grace Moretz plays Cassie, and she's a survivor of four waves of an alien invasion, or galactic party crashers, as she calls them. And the actual end of the world comes when the others invade, looking for a new planet to call their own. The first wave knocked out all of the Earth's electricity. The second wave brought floods and earthquakes. The third wave wiped out hundreds of thousands of people with bird flu. And the fourth wave saw the aliens get off their ship and sometimes take human form. So Cassie becomes separated from her five-year-old brother, Sam, and reluctantly teams up with Evan, a hunky He-Man Hemsworth kind of clone, to rescue her brother from a training camp run by the military and a very bad guy, Colonel, played by Liev Schreiber. Along the way, we have Micah Monroe from It Follows, looking like she spent an entire paycheck at Hot Topic, as well as Maria Bello and Ron Livingston, both wasted. So I have to admit,
this is a really good cast. I mean,
it is.
These are really terrific actors. And Chloe Grace Moretz, who, by the way, is making choices now that are really starting to make me mad. I don't know if you saw the trailer for Neighbors 2.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But I love her. She's great. But, I mean, really, really good cast here. So, I don't know.
Yeah. You know what's funny to me is that in the film Clouds of Sils Maria, Chloe Moretz at one point is satirizing being, you know, a teen actress. And we see her on the big screen in that movie starring in a cheesy science fiction movie.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird, because it essentially could have been this movie, in, you know, that we see in that movie. But I was kind of, I was into it for the first half hour or so, because it starts out very bleak. We see her having to make a decision in an abandoned store about whether or not the person she's about to shoot is or isn't an alien. And, you know, it's post-apocalyptic, so it's got the Hunger Games quality going for it at times. And, it, you know, it falls into that, you know, a young adult teen fiction adaptation genre that seems to be prevalent right now. But it becomes a poorly blended mixture of so many other alien invasion movies that we haven't seen before. It's the pacing is off. There's one too many expository speeches. There's a ridiculous love triangle thrown there. The action is very sparse, and it really doesn't have anything to say. There's no thematic weight behind it at all. It's just, it just kind of sits there after a while. It becomes kind of a slog. And, I mean, for fans of the books or teen dystopian novels, maybe they'll get something out of it. Other than, you know, Chloe Moretz doing whatever she can to elevate the material, this film just, you know, it's kind of lifeless for the most part. It just doesn't work.
You know, I don't read any of these books, but man, I mean, they just seem to every couple of weeks come out of nowhere. There's a new series of teen sci-fi or fantasy books. I just had no idea that that was a genre that was so prolific. You know, I mean,
they sell big. I mean, there's a lot of young female readers who really get into these series. You know, they get hooked. I mean, I never heard of the Fifth Wave before, but apparently there's, you know, a whole trilogy. But I can't imagine the sequels being adapted like this one is, because it's just, I can't imagine this having any kind of following. It's really poor.
Does it leave it open for the possibility?
Yeah, of course it does.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I mean, just it does that, and then you kind of just shrug it off afterwards. Like, you don't care. You're not anticipating to see where this story goes. You know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I know obviously this incredible blizzard that hit the East Coast had a lot of effect on the box office this week.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not a lot of people. I mean, I got the box office numbers here in front of me, and it really had a huge effect on the box office. And even with the huge effect on the box office, this movie made less than The Boy and Dirty Grandpa did.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's surprising, because it is based on a novel that I guess has a following.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm surprised about too. I mean, I thought it would make a little bit more money, or at least, I mean, more than The Boy and Dirty Grandpa did. And, right. And, you know, the second week of Ride Along 2, it still didn't do as well as those movies. So, yeah. Interesting.
That's a shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, hang on, Jim. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll take a break, and we got more movies to talk about. And then Eric is going to join us to talk from live from Sundance. Okay. All right. Morning, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN on a Monday morning. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And as you can tell, we are reviewing the movies. It's Monday morning, movie reviews. Jim Leskowski filling in for Colin Suter as he takes a little break. Has been with us. We reviewed a few movies. We're going to get back to our new movie reviews, but squeezing into his crazy schedule is Eric Childress, who joins us every week. And Eric is live from the Sundance Festival. Jim, welcome back, Jim.
Hello again.
All right, and we're going to say hello to Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hello.
Yes. Okay, excellent. Eric, now you've been, how many times have you gone to Sundance now?
I've been going since 2003, so this is my 14th year.
Jeez.
Wow. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, man, oh man, time flies.
Yeah.
Okay, and you've been there for, now it is a Monday morning, how long have you been there?
I've been here since Thursday.
Since Thursday, and what is that, 4 days?
Yeah, four and like more like three and a half.
Okay.
Only night movies on Thursday.
Okay. Well, how many movies have you seen since that time?
16.
Wow. I don't even know what to say anymore. Okay, so 16 movies. Since Thursday. And how long are you going to be there?
I'll be here till Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday afternoon. Okay. And we'll get a full report, you know, when you get back, we'll get a roundup and all that stuff. But we would like to get you in here now to to review some of the stuff that you've seen. And by the way, we Jim and I just finished up a few minutes ago reviewing 45 Years, which I know that you enjoyed very much as well.
Yeah, it was in my top 15 last year. It was terrific.
And it is out now at theaters. We talked a little bit about that. Now, did you get a chance to see any of the new stuff? Did you see The Fifth Wave or any of that stuff?
No, none of that stuff that opened this week.
Okay, well, Fifth Wave, Jim saw. I didn't see. He said it was terrible. So we've got...
pretty much.
Now, you did see in a movie that Jim and I are going to review at length. You did see a film called Synchronicity.
Yes, I did.
Which is available on demand. And you liked it, right?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm very curious to actually watch it again.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But and the reason why I wanted to save that one was because before Synchronicity, we're going to review The Boy and Dirty Grandpa. So I wanted something good to talk about a little bit later on. Okay, well, all right, let's go, man. You know, we love when you do this. You report from all the film festivals. Sundance is always the first one of the year. What would you like to start with movie-wise?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been here for 3.5 days, as I mentioned, and I've seen some good movies, and I've been sort of waiting for that one movie. I've been waiting for the one movie that's really just going to sort of blow my socks off that I just want to just tell the world about, and I just saw it a few hours ago.
Okay.
It's John Carney's Sing Street.
John Carney, he made Once.
He made Once.
And Begin Again. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, wow.
And, and this is his latest film. It's set in Dublin in 1985.
I already like it.
Just wait, sir. Just wait. There's Back to the Future references in the movie. So it involves a young kid in high school, like boarding school, and he's being transferred over to a Christian's Brother school because it's cheaper for his family that's sort of falling on hard times, business and whatnot. So he ends up going to this school, and across the street one day he notices this older but so young lady who's always just sort of hanging out by herself, and obviously he takes quite a liking to her. So he goes up to her, basically introduces himself, and basically says that he has a band. So he introduces himself, and then he has to go across the street to his friend and says, okay, we need to form a band now. So he basically starts putting together a band with a bunch of schoolmates and whatnot. He has this one guy who kind of has a John Lennon look to him, and they write music. They create lyrics between them. They have a brother. He has a brother played by Jack Rayner, who's sort of a stoner, but he's basically sort of the Lester Bangs of the story, if you will. Talking a lot about, I mean, this is the era, the mid-80s of Duran Duran and Hall & Oates and, all these sort of bands that are really sort of starting to be a big deal over there. And becomes this, as what John Carney specializes in, is this sort of, 2-hour ode to music and just the creation of music and how it sort of relates to relationships and happiness and sadness and all the great things that we love music about. And let me tell you, man, this thing, it really just destroyed me on all levels. It is a beautiful piece of work. It is the funniest thing he has done to date, and I'm not joking. I'm not speaking hyperbole when it deserves some comparison with Almost Famous.
That's high praise. Boy. That's high praise. Yeah,
you will hear a lot of people probably play the School of Rock card, which I know you're not going to be unhappy about, Nick.
Right.
And there certainly has flavor of that as well. I'm telling you, man, I was just in rapture for 105 minutes, however long this movie was. The music. It's all original songs, co-written by John Carney, performed by the kids. A beautiful soundtrack. You want it as soon as you leave the theater. There's a fantasy sequence in this thing that is just beautiful. I can't recommend this movie highly enough. I can't wait for people to see it.
Okay. Now, does it get a regular release?
It's going to. Weinstein Company has it already.
Oh, okay. All right. So we will see it then.
Yeah, I believe it's actually opening. I just heard it's actually opening in Ireland, I think, next month. So we might see this sooner than later.
Okay. I'm looking at the thing right now. It does say March 18th it opens in Ireland.
Yeah, okay.
So it's already got a poster and all that stuff. So, yeah, this movie's going to be seen. So it's called Sing Street.
Yes, that's the name of the band in the movie.
Okay, name of the movie is Sing Street, and that's the name of the band in the movie. And, again, I'm really highly recommended by Eric. All right, Eric, what else have you seen?
Okay, well, now we're going back into the good pile. And one of the more divisive movies here is surprisingly divisive, considering when I was watching it, I thought it was going to be there was going to be a bidding war for it. It's a date that still hasn't been picked up, but it's called Swiss Army Man.
I've heard about this one.
Okay. Well, for people who haven't heard about it, the movie stars Paul Dano as a guy who has apparently been stranded on some deserted island for some time. He's had no calls of rescue, and he's basically had it, and he's about to hang himself when another dead body or a dead body washes up on shore. It's the body played by Daniel Radcliffe. And so he gets distracted when this body shows up, and he begins to converse with the dead body and prop him up. You basically sort of have kind of a Castaway meets Weekend at Bernie's kind of thing going on in this movie. to even sort of describe everything that goes on in this movie would be doing it a disservice, because like it's a strange film, but done with a real sense of joy, and as Dano sort of contemplates the mistakes that he's made in his life and talking to this inanimate Daniel Radcliffe body for at least a good portion of the film before it begins talking back to him. It reminded me more of Michel Gondry's work.
Oh, okay.
Sort of like, yeah, I mean, a lot of people will be saying that it's basically Daniel Radcliffe playing Wilson from Castaway.
Uh-huh.
And that's not really far off. This is a movie that I wish the ending was stronger. This is sort of the only thing that sort of I was more like 3.5 stars for most of the movie. The ending doesn't really work. And I don't know if that's where people are divisive about it. I think people might have just checked out earlier than that. But the ending could have used another, polish. But other than that, up to that point, I think it's a really, really terrific film. Daniel Radcliffe is hilarious in this movie. Paul Dano is good. It probably has the biggest sustained fart joke in motion picture history.
That's the one. That's the thing that everybody seemed, like any little bits of press I've read about this.
Yeah.
Involves the fart scene. That's the one thing that everybody's mm-hmm. talking about. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's just say, what happens to a body when it dies.
Sure.
That's what basically what you're getting at. Except it happens a lot. A lot.
All right.
Yeah, but it's good. But I recommend Swiss Army Man is one of my top ones here.
Okay. And by the way, the guys who made it, it's their first feature.
Yes. They're referred to as the Daniels.
The Daniels, because it's two guys named Daniel.
Both of them are named Daniel.
So the Daniels, and it's their first feature. It's called Swiss Army Man. And it's not, as of yet, been picked up, and it might not be because of a fart joke.
Right.
Okay.
I don't think that's the reason. I think because there have been articles that have called the headlines have been saying that it's the strangest movie to come out of Sundance. It wasn't even the strangest movie I saw that day.
Oh.
So I think people just need to see more movies, because like I said, it's more fanciful than weird.
Yeah.
I think once you sort of accept what the premise is, it ceases to become weird.
Okay.
That's my take on it.
Okay. All right. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. I'm on board.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what do we got next?
The next is a very strange little movie called The Eyes of My Mother.
Okay.
And it's a weird horror film shot entirely in black and white, in absolutely gorgeous black and white. Cinematography of this film is some of the best I'm going to see all year. It's a movie that takes place over several years. Begins as on a farmhouse somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, where a father and a mother and their very young daughter are living. And one day a serial killer shows up, kills the mother. The father renders the killer incapacitated, and they lock him up in their barn and basically spend years ritualistically torturing him.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So that's about as far as I want to go with describing this movie. When it was sold to me, when people were telling me about it, I was like, it's really good, but if this movie was in color, you'd probably puke. Okay, I think that they might have oversold that a little bit to me, because I actually found this film quite beautiful. Definitely disturbing, definitely make you cringe many, many times. But the cinematography of the movie is so beautiful, and it's it's only 72 minutes long, so they don't. It's a movie that understands the what a 72 minute movie should be like, and this is it. And it's absolutely cringeworthy. It's certainly not for everyone. But you know, we have all these movies about torture and torture porn and all these things that we've had over the years. This one actually sort of elevates it to an art level, and gets to some really creepy, interesting, things with the daughter, that, we can't talk about on the air.
Okay.
Disturbing, but also kind of weirdly beautiful.
Okay. And that's called The Eyes of My Mother.
Yes.
All right. And, okay, what else you got, Eric?
A movie I saw today called Trash Fire. Okay. And this is another movie in the Midnight section. I've seen a few movies. This is the only one that's worth mentioning right now. It stars Adrienne Grenier and Angela Trimber. If anyone saw The Final Girls, Angela Trimber is the one who does the funny dance in the movie.
Right.
Did you see The Final Girls, Nick?
I did, yeah.
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 Okay. And they play a couple that is always sort of at each other's throats. Adrienne Grenier is not a very nice person. He's very narcissistic.
Wait, he's playing a narcissistic character?
You believe that?
Really?
You believe that? Hard to imagine. It's kind of a stretch for the young man. But
no kidding.
So he plays a guy that's had some weird tragedy in his past, where his parents were actually burned to death in a fire, and his younger sister received like burns over like 80% of her body that he sort of abandoned many years ago. So as these two characters, him and his girlfriend, are sort of patching up their relationship and sort of coming to a place where they're actually okay with each other, he decides he's going to reconcile his past and visit his sister, who has been living with his crazy religious grandmother for basically her entire life. And that's when things get really crazy. This movie is made by a guy named Richard Bates Jr., who did a movie a few years ago called Excision. Did you see that one?
Yes, I did, and I liked it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, if you liked Incision, you will definitely like this movie. It has that very same sort of weird sort of genre mashup vibe that, you know, it incorporates some dream flash sequences and things like that. For the first half hour of this movie, it seems like it's sort of a standard a weird, funny, dark relationship drama, and the movie doesn't really sort of become a horror movie until the back half of the film. And it's, again, some really creepy stuff occurs there. I wish the ending could have been a little bit stronger, a little more elongated, but I was down for the entire ride. This guy, Richard Bates Jr., if you haven't seen Excision, check that one out because that's interesting, and Trash Fire is even better.
Cool. All right, I'm looking forward to that. It was, you know, we had a very extensive conversation about, Tracy Lords was at Flashback a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And we had a pretty extensive conversation about Excision. A lot of the fans during the Q&A that I moderated brought up Excision, and I had never seen it. I had not seen it until I had that conversation with her, and then I actually watched it like 2 days after, and I really liked it. It's a very screwed up movie, but I really liked it.
And it has a lot of that. Clearly, this guy has got some religiosity in his background.
Yeah.
And that certainly carries over here, a Trash Fire, with the grandmother and a brother character of his girlfriend is also very, very extremely religious. So that leads to some very awkward conversations in the movie.
All right, cool. All right, Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Jim, hang on.
Alrighty.
All right, Eric's going to give us another set of movies that he saw during his week at Sundance. He's still there. He'll come back in a few days. And Jim is hanging out with us, Jim Leskowski, because we've got some more movie reviews to give you for the new movies of the week. And we will do all of that coming up right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And yes, it is a Monday morning, and it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Hey, The X-Files made its return last night for a six-part mini-series return. I am saving it. I have not watched it yet. But we are going to talk about TV shows that you would like to see make a comeback. And I'm thrilled that The X-Files is back. I happen to love The X-Files. I was one of those geeks in the 90s that watched it. That watched it every week religiously, burning up my VCR and my VHS tapes. So, but I love that show, and I'm glad it's back. But we're going to talk about TV shows that you really would love to see make a comeback. That's all coming up a little bit later on. We're in the middle of our movie reviews. Jim Leskowski, filling in for Colin Suter, is joining me to review some new movies. And Eric Childress, who joins us every week, is at Sundance. And he's given us a roundup of some of the stuff that he has seen this year. So, Eric, we're back.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And yeah. What else? What would you like to? Where would you like to go next?
Okay, something a little more mainstream that has actually been picked up by Netflix. So you actually get to see this on Netflix at some point this year.
Okay.
It's a movie called The Fundamentals of Caring.
The Fundamentals of Caring, okay.
Yeah, and it stars Paul Rudd as a guy who's going through some marital issues and tragedy in his past. And he takes a course to become a caregiver. And his first gig involves that of a young man with muscular dystrophy played by Craig Roberts. He's very abrasive, very much a smartass. And the two of them, you know, clearly hit it off because both of them are very much alike. So Paul Rudd, as their relationship sort of grows, he sort of persuades him, you know, to get to a point where, you know, as a kid who's in a wheelchair, confined to a wheelchair his entire life, you know, just get out and see the world a little bit. So he convinces his mother to take him on this sort of week-long road trip where he sees all these weirdo sort of touristy places that he's marked on a map that he's always wanted to see. I couldn't describe it, a movie like that, as more conventional than it actually sounds. But the difference between a movie like this and a couple other movies that kind of follow in the same sort of traditional, you know, sort of weepy crowd pleaser type movies, one called Other People, another called The Hollers that John Krasinski directed. The difference between these movies is Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. Because Paul Rudd can pretty much just take, you know, poop and make a shinola.
I agree with you, man. I love Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. And that's the thing here. I mean, Craig Roberts is also very funny in the movie. It's a very sweet movie. Really funny at times.
And I'm looking at this. I'm sorry, Eric. I'm looking at the page on IMDb. Rob Burnett wrote and directed this movie?
That is correct.
Rob Burnett, by the way, for those people who don't know, Rob Burnett was the longtime producer who worked with David Letterman for like 25 years and is responsible for a lot of really great stuff on Letterman's show.
Yeah, and it's a Worldwide Pants production.
Oh, man. All right.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. So pretty much everything in this movie happens just as about as what you might expect from this movie, except you got Paul Rudd guiding you through this whole thing and delivering some huge laughs. It never gets completely maudlin. It doesn't really take you down that path. It's sweet. It's really funny. It's charming. And it's kind of the perfect Netflix movies. It's exactly what you'll be looking for on Netflix, mm-hmm, when you don't want to leave the house on the weekend and you turn on that movie. It's literally the perfect Netflix movie.
All right, cool. Hey, speaking of Netflix movies, now when you go to South by Southwest, mm-hmm, you are going to go to the premiere of the Pee Wee Herman movie. You have to, right?
Of course.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh my God. Okay.
I know.
Now let me hear. Now, besides that one, which I mentioned, you know, in our roundup a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about movies we were looking forward to, have either of you guys? I'm sure you have. You guys have both seen the trailer for Keanu.
Yeah, I saw it on your Facebook wall.
Yeah, Eric, have you seen it?
I did. It premiered here. I heard it popped up, and I tried to watch it at one point, and I got interrupted, and I haven't gone back to look at it.
You mean the trailer?
Everyone's talking about it.
The trailer?
Yes.
Okay, Eric, you got to see it.
I know.
I've watched it like 10 times already.
Unbelievable.
It's going to be the greatest movie ever made. I'm telling you right now.
Yep. I would not be surprised. Here's my pledge to you, Nick.
Okay.
Okay. The South by Southwest Film Festival this year already has the Pee Wee Herman movie.
Yeah.
I believe they're playing Midnight Special.
Oh man.
Okay. They have the new Linklater movie.
Oh man.
Okay. Oh man.
If they play Keanu.
Yeah.
Don't you have to go?
It's one. Just, you know, fundamentally, I have to go. Yeah. Oh,
exactly.
It's unbelievable.
It'll be like a Donnie Darko rift in the universe if you are not attending that festival.
All right. Okay, cool. Okay, somebody wrote, and I know that, Jim, you posted it to my wall, and then I think it was Jim Hankey who wrote, his comment was after the trailer, was Key and Peele Cats, and George Michael, should we already say that this is Nick's favorite movie of 2016? So, all right. All right, Eric, go ahead. What else you got?
Okay. This is a movie called Wild. Okay. It has nothing to do with the Reese Witherspoon
Wild
movie. This is a different movie called Wild. 2016's
gotcha.
Wild.
All right.
And it's a German film about a young woman who works in an office. She should be doing something better in the office, but she's always ends up fetching her boss coffee, and the boss has kind of a fixation on her and whatnot. She lives alone. Her sister's got a boyfriend, doesn't really want her around. So she's very lonely, very isolated. And one day when she's coming home from work, she out in the wilderness or woods nearby her place, she spots this wolf. And she begins to sort of become obsessed with the wolf, with sort of you know where it's going, what it's doing, and just looking at it and wanting to sort of, you know, just sort of embrace nature in a way. And it gets to a point where she doesn't just want to just sort of, you know, wolf watch in a way. She actually tranks the wolf and brings it back to her apartment.
Jeez.
Yeah. And things get crazy from there.
Uh-huh.
I can't tell you too much about what goes on after this,
mm-hmm.
but let's just say that Bobcat Goldthwait would be looking at the Sleeping Dogs Lie movie he made.
No.
Oh, man.
Okay? That's all I'm saying.
Oh, man.
And it is weird and goof and crazy and shocking, and I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Jeez. Okay. All right. I don't even know. As soon as you mentioned Bobcat, I was like, please don't go there. And
yeah, let's just say he didn't go far enough.
Oh God! All right. Okay. All right.
And yet, it's not quite what you think.
All right.
I'll preface it with that. I'll just say that.
I do want to say, as you said, it's a German film, and it is written and directed by a woman, which
mm-hmm.
I find. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will say that Cartman's mom might be in it.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh,
people understand that reference.
I got it.
This movie's weird.
Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Let me ask you real quick before we let you go, Eric, because Jim and I have three more movies to review.
Yes, sir.
Now you mentioned other people, and I hear, you know, I read some of your tweets that it's not very good. But does Molly Shannon play the main part? Does she play the mother?
Yes, she does.
Oh, man. Okay, see, now I want to see it.
Yeah. I Molly Shannon, I mean, some of the performances in the movie are not bad.
Yeah.
But it's a movie that really, it wants to sort of really give you the full-on weepy mentality that
yeah.
it's going for.
Yeah.
But it also keeps prefacing it with this sort of untimely humor. And whatnot, and
yeah.
every time it seems to be going more serious, it hits you with some really out of place humor that, you know, at the beginning it's kind of funny, but the more that it sort of goes on, the more frustrating the movie becomes. It also just becomes the dramatic stuff just ends up not working because of that stuff.
Yeah, well,
but,
I mean,
the performance it's a really good cast.
I looked at the cast, you know, and the guy's a great writer. The guy who wrote and directed it is a very funny guy and a really talented writer. And then when I read the plot, but it didn't say who played what part. But when
right.
I saw Molly Shannon's name on there, it's age appropriate that she would play that role. And it's the kind of role that I'd love to see her play, you know, because
yeah.
I think she's you know how I feel about her. So
yeah. And she's good in the movie.
OK.
I mean, the movie's not very good, but she's good in it. So, you will want to see it.
OK. All right. That's other people. All right, Eric, thanks for giving us the rundown here. I mean, obviously, you just saw Sing Street, and that's probably the best film you've seen so far, easily.
Yeah, I'm on cloud nine.
Okay.
Absolutely cloud nine after
seeing
this movie.
Well, we'll get another report from you later in the week with more movies. And, if people want to get updates on what you're doing, you are tweeting as you see the films. And are you
mm-hmm.
going to be writing pieces for the websites as well?
Yes, I'm going to be writing reviews of all the movies that I liked. I'm not going to be doing any negative stuff writing-wise, but I'm going to write positive reviews of everything that I've liked at the festival as soon as I get home.
All right, cool. All right, Eric, thanks, buddy.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Have fun, man.
Thank you.
All right,
there's Eric.
Eric Childress will be joining us again. He is in Sundance at the festival. Jim, hang on. When we come back, we got three movies to review, okay?
Cool.
All right. All right, Jim Liskowski joining me, filling in for Colin Suter, and we got some movies to review. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. I want to thank Eric Childress for joining us live from Utah. He's at the Sundance Film Festival. He's going to be there for a few more days. You can follow him on Twitter, at Eric the Movie Man, I believe is his handle. That's it, right? At Eric the Movie Man, and Eric is with a K. Eric with a K. E-R-I-K. Eric the Movie Man. He tweets all of the movies that he sees, and he's going to write full reviews when he gets back. And, of course, we exclusively have him give us reports from all the film festivals. God, Sundance, South by Southwest sounds insane. Jeez. And Jim Liskowski is filling in for Colin, taking a little time off. Jim, how crazy does the South by Southwest sound?
I cannot believe that lineup.
I mean, jeez, a Pee-wee.
I'm so excited for Midnight Special. It is probably my number one most anticipated movie right now.
For those of you who don't know, Midnight Special is Jeff Nichols' latest movie. Jeff Nichols, who has yet to make a movie that isn't awesome. And this is his crack at science fiction. Michael Shannon is the lead, as he has been in three of the four films that he directed. And I am incredibly excited about that one. And, of course, we mentioned the Pee-wee Herman movie. How can you not be ecstatic about that? And he also said that Linklater's follow-up to Dazed and Confused, Everybody Wants Some, is going to be at the South by Southwest. And, of course, we knew that was going to happen. It's South by Southwest. It's Austin, of course. But, if they do decide to show Keanu, I may get on a plane and go to Austin just to bust in.
I'll pay for your ticket, man. I think you deserve it.
All right. Okay, well, let's get back to all right, we got some other stuff to talk about. Let's save the good one for last, okay?
Sure.
All right, so let's start with The Boy. Jim, tell everybody about The Boy.
Oh, boy. I bet Eric is so envious of us right now.
You know, the thing is, Jim, he's at Sundance every January. He misses all the crap. He goes away to Sundance for like 2 weeks, right in the middle when all the terrible movies come out in January. He's got it down, man.
Good timing.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, boy. So we have Greta, played by the lovely Lauren Cohen.
I love her. From the Walking Dead, folks. She's great.
Yeah. She's quite easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
She's an American woman that has just accepted a job in the UK as a nanny to the Heelshire family and their son, Brahms. When she arrives, however, she finds that Brahms happens to be a porcelain doll that the family believes is alive. Skeptical at first, when she's left alone to care for Brahms and is given a detailed list of rules to follow in order to keep him happy, when she starts to break them, strange things start to happen. She begins to suspect that Brahms is no ordinary doll. Along the ride here is a grocery store clerk of sorts who, of course, starts uncomfortably flirting with her the second they meet. And she has a crappy ex-boyfriend that she's trying to escape as well. So, yeah, this is a very simple premise with, you know, a babysitter entering a, you know, giant, could-be haunted house kind of scenario with a creepy doll. And it's just cliche-ridden right from the start. This is from the director of the equally lame The Devil Inside. And it leads to a very, very lazy and predictable twist that I saw coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. I was bored out of my skull through most of this movie, hoping it would be goofier or crazier. But once again, we are subjected to jump scares that are often the result of, you know, the classic waking the dream moment that couldn't be more played out at this point. So once the final act comes, I could not care less. As charming as Lauren Cohen is, there's just no saving this script. So let's not hear it for The Boy.
Yeah, let's not. It's terrible. It's a classic, you know, setup. It's like woman alone, a big, creepy old mansion house in the middle. And they set it up in the middle of nowhere. She's got no cell phone reception. I mean, that's set up in the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the parents of the boy are acting very, very strange, pretending that the doll is actually alive. There are rat traps all over the place. It's just, you know, so the setup is all there, and that's all this movie is. It's all set up. The director, I mean, The Devil Inside is a horrible movie. And whatever, and you know, you've got like perfect, you know, the perfect cliches to set up at least something intriguing, and it never happens. Like, he doesn't take advantage of how cool the house could be, of how creepy that could be. The idea of rat infestation is never, you know, it's brought up but never really dealt with in any way until there's kind of a weird payoff at three quarters of the way through the movie. The doll itself is not nearly as creepy as it should be. It just isn't. And I love creepy doll movies, but the doll, there's nothing, like every time they would have a shot of the doll and maybe it moved, I was like, yeah, I don't care. It's like, but it, like if I watch a movie like Magic and every time they would show a close up of Fats, it would freak me out. But that's just not the case here. And as much as I enjoy Lauren Cohen, and I really do, she's great on The Walking Dead, one of my favorite characters on The Walking Dead. They give her really nothing to do here. The lame boyfriend angle, you know, this is a PG-13 horror movie, and this is a guy who, like, she lives in the States, and she calls, you know, I guess it's her sister, and the sister keeps telling her about how, you know, her boyfriend Cole shows up at the house in the middle of the night and is banging on the door and stuff like that. And then for some reason, he shows up in England at one point in the movie. He's in the house. You know, like they're talking about how the windows are sealed. It's amazing to me how many times people just walk into the house.
Yeah, randomly they just show up.
Yeah, it's just randomly there's a dude in the house. You know, so but this guy, this idiot, and of course he's bearded with a ponytail because he's the a-hole. He just shows up in the house, and the only reason he shows up is because it's a PG-13 movie, and someone's got to die. So and that's the only reason he shows up. Now, the big sort of surprise twist in this movie, if you don't figure it out, if you don't figure it out within 5 minutes, you've never seen any movie ever. It's ridiculous.
Agreed. And probably haven't seen a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
Exactly. Episode. Or maybe you've not seen Bad Ronald from the 70s.
Right.
And so, I mean, I was like, come on, really? This is the, you know, and by the point, you know, like when the doll supposedly went to the kitchen and made her a peanut butter jelly sandwich and left it outside her door, I was like, come on, you people. You got to know what's going on now. Seriously. Yeah. Come on. So. Really, really bad. Your average sort of January horror movie. Although when I saw it, they did show a trailer for a horror movie that's coming out in February that looks really creepy called The Witch.
Oh boy, Nick, I have heard so much buzz on that.
Yeah,
it's not even funny.
Yeah. And our friend Brian Tallarico is actually quoted on the trailer.
Yeah.
And
and
the trailer looks good, man. That movie looks creepy.
I know there's some bright spots for February we have to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just get out of January.
Yes, exactly.
We got one more weekend of January to go. All right, Jim, hang on. All right.
Okay.
All right, Jim's gonna hang on when we come back. We're gonna review Robert De Niro's latest movie. Now, normally that would be, you know, like historically you'd go, oh, we're going to review Robert De Niro's latest movie. Yeah, not so much anymore. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back and our review of Dirty Grandpa will happen right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're reviewing the new movies. We got a couple more to review. One that went straight to video on demand and one that should have. Not even done that. So let's get into these movies, and then by the way, when we break, if we got weather and traffic coming up. We're going to open up the phone lines and ask you guys to text in or call in TV shows that you would love to see come back. The X-Files is back. I haven't watched last night's premiere. I have it on my DVR. I'm saving it. I'm actually thinking about staying away from the internet. It's probably not going to last very long, staying away from the internet and then like doing all six episodes at once, like doing like one, just like sitting down for like 2 days and just watching. I could actually do it in one day. It's only 6 hours, but watch all six episodes, except that I'm very excited to see it. So we're going to talk about TV shows that you would love to see come back. We also have a Blackhawks Express from last night's shutout against the Blues. And my dad is going to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. But let's wrap things up. My friend Jim Laskowski is with us. Jim, all right, let's talk about Dirty Grandpa, but let's not dwell a lot on it, because actually there's a pretty interesting film that we can talk about afterwards in this segment. So let's Dirty Grandpa.
I can't believe this movie exists.
Yeah.
But here we go. Jason Kelly, played by Zac Efron, pretty much has his life figured out. He's looking forward to getting married. And unfortunately, life takes a turn when he finds out that his grandmother has died. And broken and sad is Jason's grandpa, played by Robert De Niro, who Jason reluctantly volunteers to drive to wherever he wants. And then he gets duped into taking his grandpa to Daytona Beach for spring break. Turns out grandpa has been in desperate need of some fun. Now that his late wife is gone, he finally has a chance to do so. This movie needs to disappear from the multiplexes immediately. I would actively start a campaign to get it removed. We talked about last week about Michael Bay's Bad Boys 2 as a contemptible film.
Yeah.
This one is almost as vile. It wallows in homophobic, racist, misogynistic so-called jokes and humor that is as tasteless as it gets. You know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Bad Santa, and it's from the same writer. But, man, I would sooner rewatch Bad Santa than sit through even a frame of this movie again. It is horrible. This has to be the worst film of 2016 at the end of the year for me. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah. It is embarrassing on every level and every possible horrible cliche is in it. And it's a waste of talent. There's a lot of talented people in this movie. I mean, obviously, Robert De Niro, who keeps shooting himself in the foot, except for, I was looking back in like the last 15, 20 years, the movies that Robert De Niro has made, with the exception of Stone, which is a criminally underrated movie and a great film with him and Edward Norton. And that movie is so good. Mila Jovovich is good in it. That's how good Stone is.
Yeah, that is an underrated movie.
It's a great film. And with the exception of that movie and the stuff he does with David O. Russell, it's been really, really horrible, like unbelievable, terrible titles on De Niro's filmography, including a bunch of straight-to-video stuff that I never even saw. He's got like five straight-to-video movies on that he's done in like the past 10 years. This is just the worst, man. This is the worst. I mean, it's his worst performance. It's embarrassing. I mean, I have no idea what the hell he's doing in this movie. And Zac Efron, who I like, I think is very talented. Aubrey Plaza's in this movie for some unbelievable reason. It's horrible. It is one of the worst movies of the year. And without question, it'll be near the top of that list at the end of the year. So don't see Dirty Grandpa. It is just embarrassing on every level. And De Niro continues to dig himself a bigger and bigger hole. And this, which easily is the worst movie he's ever been in, I think. So, all right. All right, let's go to something interesting. Speaking of video on demand, this movie made its debut this weekend on video on demand. And it is, for me, one of the biggest surprises in terms of quality that I've seen so far in 2016. It's been only a couple of weeks, but tell everybody about Synchronicity.
Yeah, so a physicist is on the verge of kind of harnessing the power of wormholes to complete a time travel machine. In the lab, he's assisted by his friends Chuck and Maddie, who are always there for emotional support as well. In order to complete the project, this physicist, Jim, he must make a deal with a ruthless businessman played by the great Michael Ironside. So the rights to this machine are on the line, and if Jim and his team fails, then an evil corporation is going to lay claim to this machine. And during the initial test, a flower appears from the future. It's perplexing to them at first, but then they realize that this flower is related to a mysterious woman that pops up named Abby, who may or may not be in cahoots with the corporation. But it sort of leads you in one direction, and then it goes down a completely different one in a very playful way. I don't know how I felt necessarily about sort of the manic pixie dream girl love story aspect kind of taking hold at certain points, but obviously I am a sucker for a wonderful time travel parallel universe storyline. That's just something that immediately I get excited about. There's this movie from a couple years back called Coherence that I just completely ate up. It was a complete mind-bender. So, and this director loves the look of Blade Runner, right down to the, like, the searching spotlights and the one-too-many lens flares at times.
Yeah.
But, it's a mishmash of different influences that I just happen to really, really like. I like the performances and the score. I always enjoy A.J. Bowen. I love it when he pops up in sporting performances, too. So, I mean, maybe the love story angle just didn't click with me on a first viewing, but I bet on a second viewing I'll like it even more. But I definitely enjoyed it. It's definitely one of the better films to come out so far this year, and I'm excited to watch it again.
Well, you know, I really, really like this movie a lot. And it's, sure. You know, the setup, and again, you mentioned the Blade Runner thing. It's all, and also, the score sounds like Vangelis. This guy really clearly likes Blade Runner. There's no question about it. But having said that, he does a really nice twist on the time travel movies. And I happen to have a weakness for time travel movies. I like them. And I like when people mess with the dynamics and the cliches of time travel films. And he does a really good job with this movie. It's a very smart, thorough movie that because the setup takes a little while to get going. And I don't know why, but the guy, the Chad McKnight, the guy who plays the lead, he reminded me so much of Anthony Perkins that I was like, I seemed to like get distracted because I was like, God, this guy could be Anthony Perkins for the 21st century.
I could see that.
So anyway, and I thought the girl was really intriguing, and you can't go wrong with Michael Ironside. I thought the two guys were interesting. His two buddies were interesting, nice, sort of idiosyncratic characters. But once the main thing happens at one point, another person is sent through the time the wormhole, and when that happens, the movie really clicks and starts firing on all cylinders.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
really right. Becomes clever and makes you rethink the entire movie, which is what a good sort of mystery and time travel movie does. It makes you rethink what you've already seen, and in some cases, you get to see it from different points of view. And then it really, I think, really kicks off the final, like, third of this movie. I thought it really went into a very interesting emotional category that I didn't think it was going to go to.
It got a little dark.
It got dark, and then the movie really became about what you do for love and when is love really love and what do you believe? What don't you believe? All that stuff. And I didn't expect it to go that level. And I found the ending to be really beautiful. I really, really like this movie a lot. I think it's terrific. The guy who wrote and directed it is a guy named Jacob Gentry. And I want to mention that because he was one of three directors and writers who made a film a few years ago that I thought was great, was in my top 20 when it came out, a movie called The Signal. Which came
great
out
film. Yeah.
A terrific movie, a really interesting take on science fiction and horror that was original and creepy and scary and awesome and smart. And this guy, Jacob Gentry, one of the three filmmakers who made The Signal, I think this guy's got it. I think he's smart, and I hope he continues to make movies, and I hope people watch this one. If you're a fan of sci-fi, if you're a fan of time travel, and you love, you know, the dynamics of the time travel movie, and you like, you know, movies that do really clever and interesting things with time travel dynamics, this is a terrific film. It's called Synchronicity. It doesn't have anything to do with the great Police album from 1983, but it's called Synchronicity, and I'm a huge fan of it. I thought it was really great.
Yeah.
It was a genuinely surprising movie to see in between seeing two pieces of crap, which is how
it's
I
like
saw
a more accessible version of Primer.
Yeah.
I just happen to love.
I like Primer as well. I actually like this better, but yeah. I like Primer as well. And I mean, seriously, when when this thing kicks off about 20 minutes in, I mean, it just fires on all cylinders and it goes. And I really liked it. Really smart stuff. All right, what do we got? What do we got next week? We got Kung Fu Panda 9.
Oh man.
We got the ship is sinking movie with Casey Affleck. The Finest Hours. Yeah. I think those are the two big ones that come out next week.
So yeah, we'll find some diamonds in the rough. Hopefully,
I hope so. Well, that's exactly what Synchronicity turned out to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So stay home. Don't go to the movies. especially if you're listening on the East Coast. You got no choice. But check out your VOD and check out Synchronicity. Really, that's the best movie of the week. Well, actually, 45 Years is. But the best new movie of the week is Synchronicity. All right, Jim, thanks again for filling in for us, man. And we'll talk to you next week.
Anytime, man.
All right, buddy. Take care. That's Jim Liskowski filling in for Colin Suter. Eric Childress is in Sundance. All three of us will review the new movies next week. And Eric will stop by again at some point to give us a final wrap-up of all the stuff he saw in Sundance.